Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hey, everybody. It's Teresa and America, and we are here with
Catherine
with MHA. And today we're going to talk about, am I bipolar? So if somebody is Googling out there, am I bipolar? We're chatting with Catherine because, Catherine, you struggle with bipolar disorder. Yes.
Yes.
Can we not say struggle?
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I don't know.
Live with, thrive with.
I like to say thrive with or succeed in spite of.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
But I personally, it's not something that I don't use to say, I don't say I struggle with it. I say I live with it.
That's so interesting.
I think that's an important distinction.
It is. And when people use that language to talk about myself, or if I hear people saying that, I mean, it kind of makes me think, well, I mean, it's not to say that I haven't struggled with it, but it's not necessarily the first thing that I would choose to say about myself is that I struggle with it. I have struggled with it and I have to do things to take care of it. But I would say I live with it, or I succeed in spite of, I thrive.
You're crushing it.
I'm crushing it.
You're crushing
it. I am crushing it. But I realize that's a privilege also. I've come to a place in my life where it's easy for me to say that, but it hasn't always been that easy.
Okay, cool.
We're sharing the fact that you live with bipolar disorder, succeed with. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Because people have heard both Teresa and myself on the podcast, and we shared a little bit about ourselves in the past. Nobody has heard you before. So tell us a little bit about Catherine.
My name is Catherine. I am from Fort Worth, Texas, which is something that if you know me, you will hear me talk about a lot. I was born and raised in the South, and now I live here in Washington, D.C. and work at the MHA National Office, and it's kind of a dream come true for me. Mental health is a really big part of my life, and it fuels the work that I do, and it's definitely because of my own experiences, but I wouldn't say I found myself working here strictly because of that. I've always been someone who was really passionate about serving and helping other people, but beyond that, I'm someone who loves a lot of music. I really like to wear colorful clothes. If you ever see me in real life, you'll probably see me wearing something bright and colorful or wearing a lot of accessories. But, you know, it's interesting when you ask who I am. I've come to a place, you know, living with bipolar disorder, which I think is hard. You know, is this me or is it bipolar? Which one came first, the chicken or the egg? Because also, if you know me, I'm just someone who naturally talks really fast. And I am pretty energetic. And I am, you know, wearing colorful clothes and outgoing. But at some point, someone explained to me that the hard part about bipolar disorder is that the things you're experiencing aren't necessarily things that people don't experience, right? Like these feelings of highs and lows, like happiness and sadness, are things that everyone experiences, except they're just to heightened extremes.
They're like multiplied.
Right, right.
I think what's interesting, though, about what you're saying is this whole idea of, because you wear colorful clothing and you're naturally vivacious, right, that it can be hard for somebody who has that kind of personality to figure out, is this just me or is this other aspect of myself? Because I think that's something that we kind of talked about before, right, Teresa?
But I think that's what people want to know.
Yeah.
It's like, tell us a little bit about your story. How did you come to know, what was that like for you, right? That you were able to distinguish between the vivacious self that you are and what it meant to have bipolar disorder.
Right. Well, and so that's an interesting question, because that's definitely changed throughout my life and what that looks like. And in the beginning, it was different than it is now. But when I was 14, I started seeing a therapist, and my therapist heard me the way I spoke and could hear it in my voice. She thought that I might have ADHD, just hearing the way that my brain was working. And so she connected with me with a psychiatrist. So I was already seeing a psychiatrist at the time, and there was a lot of things going on in my life. And I would definitely say, and as I came to learn afterwards, you know, a lot of people's, like, when mental illnesses, you know, come about in people because of like a traumatic event will happen. You know, I was in high school, I was trying to take the SATs. It was a really, really stressful time in my life personally, you know, and at school and everything. And it came down to where I was like, you know what? I don't think that this is normal. Like, I did not understand how one second my mom and I could be having a conversation, and then the next second I could be you know, swearing her out and cussing and all these things. And then I'd go upstairs and start self-harming and think about how I wanted to kill myself and how all these things. And then I'd wake up and I'd be fine. And then it would repeat. And I think that was the scary part. And I think that everyone with a mental health condition or anyone kind of struggling with anything comes to a time where they realize, no, I am, like, this is not normal. And I don't think that I have to be this way. I think that was one of the hardest things is realizing. And that's something that I have to remind myself about all the time is that it doesn't have to be that way. And that was something that's hard to understand. But once I started on that journey of recovery, it's kind of this like thing where you're like, well, man, that feels really good. Maybe if I keep doing that, it'll get even better. When I was 17, I took a mental health screen. At the time, Mental Health America had a screening program that was hosted on our website. And I distinctly remember Googling mental health screens. And I took a mental health screen in a mall. And I thought, you know, my dad had bipolar disorder, so it wasn't exactly like it was coming out of nowhere, but I kind of saw some of those things. And then I was like trying to take a practice SAT and I had this breakdown and I was like, Mom, I think I have bipolar disorder and I'm really scared. And we had this moment where I was like, my life is over. I'm not going to get married. Like, I'm not going to do anything. I'm never not going to be able to take medication. Like, I thought that my life as I knew it, which I didn't even know what it was. I mean, I was 17. I didn't even really have a life yet, but it was kind of like immediately I saw a future that I didn't even know was possible was not ever going to be on the table for me because it completely like warped my idea of what my life would turn out to be. And I had this really interesting moment. And I remember my mom looking at some article and being like, Catherine Zeta-Jones has bipolar disorder. You know, she was like, telling me all these celebrities. And I was like, oh, okay. But quickly after that, it was the feeling that a lot of people have is I was like this huge sigh of relief. And I was like, I'm not crazy. This is real. If you can name it, you might be able to tame it. If I can name it, then it's not as scary.
So that's amazing. Yeah. In the process that you kind of went through. But I wonder, you know, you talk about your dad and you talk about your mom. Did you guys talk about your dad having bipolar disorder like early on?
No. And it's kind of interesting. And that's another kind of journey. And as I'm getting older, I would really like to go back and talk to my mom as the caregiver and kind of their perspectives on it. Because I definitely grew up in a home and it was like, don't air your dirty laundry, which I didn't really understand that's what was going on when I was growing up, which I think is the testament to like, I've always been someone who's just like very headstrong, thinks what I want to think. But like when I was in high school, my mom used to ask me where I told my friends I was going when I was going to therapy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I tell them I'm going to therapy. Like, what's the big deal? And I remember my mom making me feel like, and it's not her fault at all, right? But that's just the fact of the matter. And that's why we're working in spaces like what we're doing now is so that that doesn't happen. But I remember thinking, you know, my mom makes me feel like I should be ashamed of this. And I remember writing notes on my phone and being like, maybe I talk too much. Like maybe I'm trying to get attention because I'm talking about something else. And then as I started to get older and when I was in college, which was a really big breaking point, which I think about me with my mental health journey, which maybe we'll talk about later. But I ended up starting a student organization at my campus, a mental health advocacy organization. But that was only after I spent a month in outpatient therapy. I got interviewed for a school newspaper article for the mental health issue. And it was like, I put it all out on the line.
Like I talked about
self-harm. I mean, and at first I was going to be anonymous in this article. I was like, okay, I'm going to do it anonymously. And then the night before this article comes out, I'm like, what am I doing? You know, at this point, I was in my psychology undergrad. I was studying addiction and human development. I was going to go be a therapist. And I was like, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it. And so I decided to put my name on the article and I didn't tell my parents. And then the next day they woke up and I basically had to like beg them to tell me that they were proud. But the first thing my mom said was, well, what are we supposed to tell people? Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, what are we supposed to tell people in Fort Worth? And I said some expletives and I was like, you know, to screw off. And I hung up the phone and I had never felt more hurt. I don't think my mom or my dad realized that parents lose their children to suicide for things like this. And like really horrible things happen because people can't talk about this. It did not make sense to me why my parents weren't proud or acknowledging the fact that I was like, there had to be some reason that it was so easy for me to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of something that I carried with that. It was more of like, well, why is that? You know, like I realized that not everyone, and it's not that people, and that's something that I've learned. It's not that everyone has a voice, and some people's voices are just naturally can be louder than others. And mine was one of those. And I realized for every voice that wasn't being heard, mine might've been drowning theirs out. And so I have a responsibility to do something with that, you know, like use that for better or for good.
So let's go back to your description of seeing that therapist for the first time. And she was like, well, I think you have ADHD or maybe you have bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. You ended up taking a screening, which is really interesting, that helped you. But what were some of those actual experiences that you had that helped you distinguish between whether or not you had ADHD or just depression or bipolar? Like, how did you really kind of come to accept that this felt right?
So the ADHD part came first. And so when I was talking about earlier, kind of that, like when you get a taste and when you make any remote progress, it's kind of, I mean, it's encouraging. And it was like, I was already naturally into it. So at the time when I first started taking ADHD medicine, I had no idea that I was smart. Like I knew that I was intelligent, but I was not making good grades. And I had all these racing thoughts and I started getting treatment for that. And I started being able to funnel my thoughts and channel my thoughts.
For the ADHD.
For the ADHD.
The meds helped you at that.
Yeah. So the meds helped me. And so that was, you know, freshman year. And I didn't get diagnosed till junior year. But at that time, it was easy for me because I had already had a positive experience with a psychiatrist and I was being treated and it was going well.
Well, how can you tell the difference though between just being hyperactive because of ADHD and the difference between having mania? How would you distinguish that? Because you've experienced both things.
And that's also something that I'm starting to figure out. And then the place that I'm in at right now with my own management is understanding those things, is the differences between, because they do share a lot of similarities, ADHD and mania. But the best advice that I've ever had that someone gave me about how to figure out mania and hypomania symptoms is when I was in college and I was in this outpatient program and my therapist told me to get the textbook Symptoms of Mania, mm-hmm, and then go through and write down an example of a behavior that I knew was that. It's really hard to understand when you're going through it because it's like a lot of symptoms of things, like they manifest in different ways, right? Like I had to understand what that looked like in my own life.
So give us an example.
So I was writing down things like about the sleep thing. That was also definitely my biggest, and that's always been true. And that's even how now I'm like, okay, I'm sleeping regularly. That was always my biggest trigger to me. But I would write down like, would go to bed at 1, wake up at like 5:30 to go to a workout class, pop out of bed and not know any different. And I would do that for extended periods of time. Okay. And so after the fact, you know, I'd write down or what those looked like in past times where I knew that's what I was experiencing. So blacking out, binge drinking and promiscuity definitely went hand in hand for me in college. Okay. And honestly, it took me a long time. And I honestly kind of feel like I've reclaimed myself in my sexual relationships because for a long time, they were happening when I was not in good places. They would be coupled with a night of drinking. Like there's nothing wrong with having sex, right? But in the ways that I was doing it, like I know this a very different change. It's like consciously knowing what was going on and what I was doing versus like promiscuity and sleeping with people was coupled with nights of blacking out and being completely out of control.
So I find it interesting when you talk about this experience and now, when you think about the aspect of sleeping, for example, right now, do you currently like keep like something that you jot down that say, I've gotten 5 hours of sleep, 7 hours of sleep. Do you do that now?
I don't do that now.
No? Okay. So if you were going to get into a manic phase or you start getting the symptoms of it and sleep is one of the triggers for you where you start only sleeping like 2 or 3 hours, do you think that you would be able to start recognizing that, or would it be necessary for someone to be like, yo, Kat, you're not sleeping, dude?
At the place that I'm in my life, I would definitely recognize that.
Okay.
I would absolutely do that. But it's also kind of hard because I'm just in such a completely different place in my life. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, things like our conference, I was fine functioning on 2 hours of sleep. I don't find that problematic, though, because if you look at what I'm actually doing, and that kind of gets into another one of the other kind of big turning points for me in my understanding. There's a quote from the movie Into the Wild. I think it's a John Krakauer quote, but it says, happiness is only real when shared. And I notice, and when I look back on times where I was hypomanic in my life, I was the only person feeling that joy. Mm-hmm. You know, I was on top of the world. I thought I was going to change things at Alabama. I thought that I was going to do all these things. But the things that were making me feel that way were not things that, as a person, especially now, I would have really wanted me to be making that happy. But that was kind of a singular experience. And so it was just kind of like a mediator, like, I know for sure that this is more real because it is shared. Whereas if it wasn't, it would make me think about it again and be like, well, what else is going on? Is that actually, are those feelings coming from a place that makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are all the real questions we ask ourselves when we're checking ourselves. And it's, I love that trick that you have, because I think that's really useful for people. It's like, I think probably a lot of people with mania would relate to that kind of checking mechanism, because it is hard to figure out that point where my happiness is because of the great things that are happening in my life, and when does that tip over to that alone happiness. That, and also it sounds like a touch of realizing that manic happiness is not just alone and isolating, but not checked into what's happening in reality. Like, we know that it kind of comes from this place in our minds that doesn't make any sense, right? And it's like, how does a person know when it's in their mind?
I think that though, when you think about your experience and listening to you and the things we've talked about before in the podcast, it's this idea, you know, you used earlier, like, normal and abnormal, right? But it's this whole idea of understanding your normal. Like, nobody knows your experience but you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it is really important to be able to check in with other people. And of course, people that you trust, right? Because it's not just somebody that's like, oh my God, yeah, I love Kat. She's so vivacious, blah, blah. And it's like, no, dude, like, do you really know Kat? Because it's not just about this vivacious person. You know, there's all these other facets to you as an individual. And I think that being able to have somebody or people or your parents or your partner, whoever, that you can go to and be like, is this me right now? Or is this something else? And know that they're not going to judge you for it, right? Because, and I wonder if that's something that you can do now with the people that were around earlier on, like in the relationships that you have with your mom and stuff like that. From what I understand and what you've shared, is that it has gotten better, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in that aspect, and I was really lucky, reminds me of two things, but that first thing is, like, it is so important to let the loved ones around you in on these conversations, to be okay with, and if you might not have that, but to be okay with letting those people around you, like, hey, if you take that list of those manic triggers that you have, or even your depressive triggers, and you create that space and you let people know that you kind of want them to be monitoring that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I realized, and one of my best friends early on had realized, when my head starts to slip, and that's what I started to have to get good at when I was in high school, was you have to be so aware of your emotions and where they're coming from. Like, I know myself very well in that aspect. And it comes to a point where all I need is a change of scenery, because, you know, we're all our own worst enemies.
Yeah.
And the worst thing you can do is just sit there and ruminate and let your head run wild. And I had a friend who realized that, you know, like, she could tell by the look on my face or the way I talked to her, or even like the text that I would send her. And she knew that all I needed, like, she didn't have to talk to me, but I just needed someone to come take me out of there. Take me out of my house, literally remove me from the situation to change my headspace. She'd be like, knock on my door, and we would go sit on the porch and not talk. Getting back to the idea with, like, and the am I bipolar and where I'm at in my life, I've realized, and I think a lot of us know here, it's like, people don't want to be the first person to engage, but when you create the space, people love to engage. So I kind of feel like me self-harming, it wasn't because of that, but I definitely think that that was at play. Mm-hmm. It was like, I kind of wanted people to ask me about that because I wanted people to notice that.
Door.
Right, right.
I wonder too, when you talk about the self-harm, you're talking about physical, you know, manifestations of you like hurting your body, but you've also talked about, you know, drinking excessively, which mm-hmm. is also self-harm, right? Because mm-hmm. who knows the things that you did when you were in a state of inebriation
mm-hmm.
or putting yourself in relationships that are super harmful. I don't know if you did that. This is something that comes to mind where, you know, it's not good, but you're just like, eh, whatever. I feel something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is the weird thing about self-harm is like, people think that it doesn't feel good, but for somebody who's self-harming, like it feels good.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, and the substance use is something that I wasn't really aware of what was going on, but I think about the things that I did. And for a while I thought that I was just like a bad person mm-hmm. because there was a lot of things that I did when I was really intoxicated, and it got me down because I was like, am I that person? Am I that girl? And then because I was like, wait, that's not me. When I realized that that wasn't me, mm-hmm. that the things that I was doing when I was drunk weren't who I was like, oh, I was in a much worse place than I thought.
I mean, it takes time for people to look back. I think when you're in the throes of it, it's like nothing. It's like, this is normal for me. Like, why would I even question it? And it's not until something kind of has to happen, at least in my experience, where somebody's like, damn, this has gotten to a place that's not good anymore.
When you're not in that headspace, I think is when we have to go back to those moments
yeah.
and be like, wow, I royally screwed up, or I know I was totally checked out and not even in the right mind space. And then use that lesson to use it as a benchmark for understanding like, okay, that's like what that's like for me. And if this happens again, mm-hmm. this is what I need to be pay attention to, because this is basically how my body and my brain is telling me like, this happens for you.
It's hard because I think when you start thinking about self-harm and things like that, it is very much misunderstood for many people, for people looking at it from the outside. And there's so much judgment that's placed on that because of the lack of information around it. But I appreciate the fact that you sat with us and kind of helped us think through these things, because I think it would help a lot of the people that are out there.
Yeah, I do have one more final question to just help people understand, because we talk about the thing that helps you figure out what you're dealing with, right? So like for some people who have bipolar disorder, being on a stimulant actually will trigger
right.
a manic episode that's actually horrible. So they're like, okay, that's not working for me. Like stimulants don't make me calm. So have you settled on like a mood stabilizer? Is that what has helped you realize, you know what, this feels right? And like, I have a treatment option that works for me.
Mm-hmm.
So like what works and it helps gives you an idea about what's going on for your brain.
At the time when I moved here 2 years ago and I graduated college, I was taking 4 medications at pretty high doses of all of them. And I realized I kind of accidentally stopped taking them in the process of like getting into a new routine, you know, like starting a new job. And I was like, do I need to be on these? Do I need to be on all this medicine? I wasn't on medication until recently again. So I was off medication for 2 years, about 2 years. And that was fine for me. But at first I freaked out. I was like, is this even possible? Like, and no one had ever told me that. I never knew if one, that was a goal for people. Two, if it was possible
to be off of meds.
Right. And I saw a great psychiatrist and she said, I told her everything. And she was like, here's what I think. One, I think you have the right diagnoses. Two, no, I don't think you need to be on all that medication. I think there's a lot there. I think part of that was her listening to me, her, you know, understanding me and hearing the way I talked about things, and was like, yes, it's possible not to be on medication. And I've met people who have bipolar disorder and didn't take medication, and it kind of blew my mind that they didn't do that. And then I started to realize that everyone's is different. And then I wanted to start going back on it again, because there was a lot of uncertainty that I was feeling. It was actually really cool. This past Christmas, I went back and I saw my psychiatrist from high school, who I hadn't seen in 5 years, who actually still treats my dad. And it was funny. I was like, I had a reunion. I had my high school reunion later that day. And I was like, I'm such a stereotype or like a cliche of myself, like classic Catherine's going to the psychiatrist and then do like a school function. But I was like more excited about like impressing my psychiatrist.
Yeah.
But he asked me like what bipolar disorder is. I tell people it's too many emotions and not enough control, which to me, I had been spending a lot of time trying to be like, and that gets back to the whole idea. Is this just my personality or is this bipolar disorder? Mm-hmm. So that has really changed the way I think about things, because now instead of being like, well, but I really did want to do that and like, and this, it's like, it doesn't even matter. Stop trying to figure out whether it's symptomatic. The fact of the matter is I'm having too many feelings about it. Like I was having, it's like, if it's causing me to have this many emotions about it and this much distress, whether good or bad, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter the symptom. It's the matter that it's causing you this many emotions, whether good or bad.
Yeah. Too many emotions and not enough control.
Not enough control.
That's great. Yeah. Well,
that is good.
I know.
Thank you. I mean, I think it also sounds like, you know, when she said, I think you have the right diagnosis and you felt like you had some control over your treatment options, mm-hmm. and like have gained enough life experience to be like, this is what works for me and this is what doesn't work for me. And this is the way I want to be able to feel and have control. Like, do you feel better now? Like, do you feel powerful?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do feel like that. And kind of that reclaiming thing, and I'd said this before, and I know that this is kind of off topic, but, and I've also realized that this doesn't, words affect people differently. You know, at MHA, we are very conscious and we use person first in our language and stuff. But when I was in outpatient therapy, the woman was like, I keep hearing you say like, I am bipolar. I am blah, blah, blah. And she was like, let's get this straight. You are not bipolar. You have bipolar. And then like we talk about here, you are not cancer. And I started changing the way I talked about myself. And I was not expecting for it to affect me that much because it took that away. And then it told other people it wasn't okay for them to describe me as that either. It's like, oh, that's Catherine. She's bipolar. No, she has bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of that, like reclaiming that. And then ever since then, I have been like, no, I have this. It's like not only like it's do I live with it, but like I have it. Like I have this under control. Like mm-hmm. I have the experience. And like, so now this. I'm in a it's place, right. But I do feel very in control of it now. It has not always been that easy, but I'm definitely someone, if you ask me if I had to change, if whether or not I had it, I would say no. I would like to keep it. I know that not everyone feels that way. I know that not everyone will ever say something like that. I kind of feel like more people would be able to say things like that if they all got help within months or year, like that short window, you know, the whole idea that 10 years go by before people start to show symptoms
or get diagnosed.
And then when they get treatment.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been 10 years since I started seeing a therapist and where I am now.
Yeah.
And I have been on, you know, probably 8 or 9 different medicines. I've been hospitalized 2 times. I've been to outpatient therapy and I am at peace with all of that. And I'm able to sit here and use that. I'm able to sit here and work at MHA, talk about these things.
How old are you?
Can
I ask that?
I'm 24.
Whoop, whoop. Good job, you. Kicking ass.
So, you know, to close out this this session, which has been very informative and very touching, because I'm speaking for you, Teresa, really appreciate you like sharing your experience with us and sharing it with everybody that is going to listen to this podcast, because it's really important.
Yeah.
One of the whole aspects that we talked about is that we cannot speak to these issues if we haven't lived it. So it is about ensuring that the voices that are being heard, whether it's today or otherwise, can speak from a place of truth. So thanks, Kat.
Can I say one more thing?
Thank you.
Yeah, dude, say it.
I wanted to say, so now that I am in this place in my life, I am totally starting to realize that, you know, everyone talks about these things that make us different or weird or whatever make us unique now. Mm-hmm. So now I'm in a really good place and I still get treatment for my ADHD, but I'm not having thoughts of self-harm. My mind is not swirling with all these really negative thoughts. And my brain operates so quickly. Like I think like neurodiversity, you know, I think that's really interesting and it's very real. And maybe someone wants to add in what that is. But now it's like all these things that I know how to deal with those things, like I can use those to my advantage. And I even think about as my future goes on, as I'm a young working professional, because of all those years of constantly having to be like, well, when's that other foot going to drop? You know, like, I don't think I'm going to get too close to the sun and burn myself. Like, I might want to start a business one day. But now I'm realizing where those are strengths in my life. I'm able to make connections faster than other, and my brain works differently. And I realize that that's on my benefit now.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Catherine. And hopefully this was an informative session for people who are wondering, you know, am I bipolar? Do I have bipolar? We are not our mental illnesses.
That's right.
So let's keep fighting.
Alrighty. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks all. Bye.